Hi, I'm the Strategious Cowboy. Today I'm going to review a whiskey barrel aged American stout with a very, very high ABV level from the craft beer brewery Epic Brewing. This beer is barrel aged in used whiskey barrels. But I have caught a cold. And with that, I don't mean that I have caught a cold beer, mind you. Also, I am building a fence in my garden, so I may not put out a new episode of Beer Strategy and Warfare every week in the coming months. This week's lone contestant is thus the craft beer heavyweight champion, Big Bad Baptist.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Our first and only contestant for this week is the ale Big Bad Baptist Imperial Stout from Epic Brewing in Utah. Albeit, the beer is brewed and canned in Denver, Colorado. Colorado is perhaps the beer mecca in the USA. Utah is, how should I put it, not. The ingredients in the Big Bad Baptist Imperial Stout beer assortment are water, barley malt, hops, yeast, and coffee/cocoa. But I'm guessing to a certain degree. The malts are of strange sorts, and I won't list them here. The hops are of the American sorts, Nugget, Chinook, and Cascade. Americans sure are patriotic, also when it comes to beer. And why shouldn't they be, seeing that some of the best hops for making beer comes from the US? The expiration date on this particular beer is mid-August 2023. I purchased this beer in late December 2022. It has been standing in my cooler since. Today it is early May 2023. The Big Bad Baptist beer assortment comes in a size 35.5 centiliters, i.e. 12 liquid ounces can. The can is mostly dark in color, and the image depicting a Baptist is white. The text on the front of the can is green and white. The Baptist depicted on the front of the can, holding a mug of beer and a tall cross, is just art. Since he is holding a tall cross, and since this beer has got alcohol in it, I'm guessing that the brewers/owners, although living in Utah, are not Mormons. Mormons don't drink alcohol or coffee or tea, and they don't smoke or use drugs other than medicinal drugs for treating illnesses. There are no Christian cross ornaments in the Mormon churches, albeit they confess to the Christian faith. The Big Bad Baptist Imperial Stout beer assortment cost me 51 kronor and 50 ears. I'm sorry, but I don't know how to translate our version of cents into English. In Swedish, it would be ören. In Swenglish, it should be ears. But ears in English is what you hear with. Anyway, 51 kronor and 50 ears is equivalent with $5. That is about $1.70 per every 4 ounces of beer. It hurt my wallet. Utah has got state-owned liquor stores for exclusive rights to sell high alcohol level liquids. Just like in Sweden with our Systembolaget. Systembolaget says that the preferred serving temperature on this beer is 12 to 14 degrees Celsius, i.e. about 54 to 57 degrees Fahrenheit. The brewery says nothing about preferred serving temperature. The Big Bad Baptist Imperial Stout beer assortment has got a whopping 12% ABV. 12%. How about the experience then? One moment. It's okay. So, hoppy, chocolatey, coffee-like aroma. It's very, very, very dark. Black, pitch black, I think. Let's turn on the light here. Yeah, pitch black. And it's got a one finger tall head with a thick foam. Ah. First impression. It's very strong. it is really strong. But I think it's brewed like this. They didn't just pour liquor in it. I don't think so. It's brewed like this. But they must have had some help. Like a long period of time while fermenting in the casket, the barrel, and there's some sugar. It's very sweet. It's rich, of course. It's very rich. It's a dark beer, a stout with 12%. Wasn't it? 12%. Let's see here. Yeah, 12% ABV level. And very sweet, as I said. It's rich and sweet. And my first impression is that it's thick. Oily thick, almost. It's a yeasty. Yeah, if you can sense the yeastiness in it, I think it is. But it's difficult to say because it's got very strong flavors of coffee and of especially coffee. No use to speak about maltiness in it. Taste on my palate, let's see. Brown sugar. Or something, yeah, brown sugar, cane sugar. And a little bit chocolatey and coffee-like, of course. And it's very sweet. It's sweet. I think it hurt my tooth too. Or my teeth. Um, It's bitter. And I think I can sense it's a very strong hoppiness in it. Because I can sense it through the other coffee flavor and chocolate flavor. And brown sugary flavor. So I'd say that it's hoppy, but it's difficult to ascertain when trying out beers like this one. A stout like this one. And it's a candy-like. But what candy? I don't know what candy it should be, but it's so sweet. But I wouldn't say candy-like. There's some fruitiness in it. I almost sense some fruitiness, like orange peels or... or lemon peels. Something, perhaps. I'm not sure they have fruits in it or fruit peels in it, but I think it tastes like it. Very strongly, actually, of the orange peels or lemon peels. And it's spicy. The undertone is all sweetness. It's not even an undertone, it's a prevalent tone. One moment, excuse me. We will get to carbonation level, I think pretty normal. Normal to high. Is it creamy? Yeah, it is. It's not acidic, and there are no aberrations. No, there are no aberrations. And it's, of course, dark roasted. And it got whiskey barrel aged flavor in it. That's, I can sense that, because I'm gonna check what you call it. It's rough on your... taste buds. It is like whiskey, actually, in some way, but not so much. Okay, let's see if there are more flavors in it. Pumpernickel's bread. Yes, it is. It has. Let's see. I'm going to read my chart. Pineapple, no. Pine needle, no. Apricot, no. Light bread, no. Banana. Maybe banana taste. Yeah. I'd say that some of the sweetness is banana taste like. Yeah, it is. It's not straw-like. There's no syrup in it. I don't think there's honey in it. But licorice. Some licorice taste. It is, definitely. No clove, no fudge, but chocolate there is. And coffee. No raspberry, no blueberry. Blueberry, no mango, no tangerine. But orange peels or lemon peels. There are or is. Raisin, no. Vanilla, no. No, those are the tastes. The tastes I have. It's licorice, pumpernickel bread, banana, coffee, chocolate. That's about it. Okay, what about grading then? Let me tell you. I'm going to grade this beer high. But I wouldn't drink it every day. It's too strong for one, and too much flavors for reading a book and sitting in the sun. In my garden. So I'm gonna grade this beer. I'm actually gonna grade this beer 10 devils out of 10 possible. And it's not because it's Mormon. No, but Utah made but or anything. I think it's brewed in what's called Colorado. But because it's a good beer. I like it. And but it's not an everyday beer, and especially not if you look at the price tag. I mean, 50 kronos, 51 kronos and 50 years. Okay, let's forget about that. Now, absolutely don't drink and operate heavy machines, military or civilian. Drink responsibly or not at all. Don't drink at all if you're underage or pregnant. Today's lesson is 30 minutes long. I solve a 5,000-year-old murder mystery in a way that would have been accepted at the time when forensics was a virtually non-existent tool. In earlier times, the authorities had to rely on, or chose to rely on, confessions through torture methods in the absence of evidence. If your name was Cecil and you had the job as head of the intelligence service for the crown and Elizabeth I in service of England at the 16th century, and you had earned your post through meritorious cognitive talents, and hand steady actions. You could be more cunning than that and trick the Catholic stooges out of information using the crown's aides who pretended to be kinsmen of Catholicism. There are four main theories as to why Ötzi, the Austrian discovered Iceman, who was found in the Alps in the 1990s, was murdered 5,000 years ago in the Copper Age. The Copper Age marks the transition between the Stone Age and the Bronze Age. Ötzi was naturally mummified centuries before the first blue-blooded Egyptian was mummified. I believe in the theory that Ötzi had a rival in his own relatively large village, but I think it is possible to penetrate the murder plot and speculate further on the methods of the murder and on how the plot turned out. Ötzi was a distinguished person in his clan, which is a known fact because he died with an exclusive copper axe in his possession. The fact that the axe was not stolen indicates that it was one of his own who murdered him. With a little help from modern science, if I have not proved it. So in any case, I have probated a certain causal course of events that preceded and led to a Regal murder. And I have shed light on the power positioning that probably followed on the Regal murder. All the indicators point in the same direction. It was probably an internal power struggle over the chief position between two slightly older antagonists in what is today's Italy. Let us move on to this week's long lesson that I call Ötzi. The mummified murdered Iceman Ötzi was discovered on the Austrian side of the Alps, laying with his head towards the mountain ridge another 5,000 years after the murder. There is a church stone in Austria which describes the murder in detail. A church stone which, incidentally, has not always been a church stone since Christianity did not exist 5,000 years ago. Viking Age runestones were used as in similar ways in Swedish churches as paving, so it was common to do so after the Viking Age in Sweden, and one can assume that it was just as common in Austria if we presume that there were engraved pagan stones available. And there are 11 clues to this murder mystery. Clue number one. Ötzi was found on the Austrian side of the Alps, laying on a mountain top with his head towards the mountain ridge. Clue number two. Ötzi was shot with an arrow in the back, wryly upwards from below, and the arrow had cut an artery, after which Ötzi bled to death. Clue number three. The distance between the archer who killed Ötzi and Ötzi himself was relatively large. The arrow did not hit his body with full force, but stopped a bit from the heart. Clue number four. The arrow was pulled out of the body and there was no trace of it when they found the body, but the tip of the arrow remained inside Ötzi's body. Clue number five. Several of Ötzi's arrows from his arrow quiver had been broken off at the site. Clue number six. When they found Ötzi's body in the 1990s, they discovered an exclusive copper axe laying 5 meters away from the body, which could only have belonged to an important man during the Copper Age. Clue number seven. Ötzi was murdered 5,000 years ago during the short Copper Age in Italy. Clue number eight. The investigated stomach contents in Ötzi indicate that Ötzi came wandering from the Italian side, Italian within quotation marks, walking to the Austrian side, Austrian also within quotation marks. It is also known because of the stomach contents that Ötzi climbed the mountain in the springtime. Clue number nine. Ötzi had wounds on his body from a fight a few days earlier. Clue number 10. Metal ore was mined at the Austrian side of Inndalen, Inn Valley, in the area. And finally, clue number 11. There is an engraved pagan stone that later has been used as building material in an Austrian church, which describes the murder in detail. And then I have five hypotheses. Hypothesis A, B, C, D, and E. Hypothesis A. One of the theories is that Ötzi was ritually murdered in the mountains. What contradicts this theory is that Ötzi had wounds to the body, which had begun to heal from a battle a few days earlier. And also, the fact that Ötzi was on one of the mountain ridges when he was murdered, and consequently was in the only place in the mountains where he could comfortably lie and await and look for him without risk of detection, a number of people, indicates that it was deliberate murder, not ritual murder. Another thing that struck me was that a ritual murder would hardly have been committed on an alpine peak where no one was there to witness it. I think we can disregard the theory that it was a ritual murder for several reasons, as most scholars will agree on. Hypothesis B. A second theory is that Ötzi was murdered by a rival clan in another community. I contextually distinguish between rival clans in other communities and rival family constellations in their own village. I do not believe hypothesis B either, that a clan on Ötzi's side of the Alps, or the opposite side of the Alps, were the perpetrators. If, for example, we assume that the rival clan lived on the opposite side of the Alps, then it would seem strange that such a clan on the other side of the Alps would first have learned that the man who was obviously their enemy, Ötzi, planned to come to their side and in addition know that he would travel alone, and then climbed the Alps and ambushed the supposedly alone Ötzi somewhere at the border of Ötzi's territory. Now, Ötzi may have been beaten in the diametrically opposed clan area in, quote, Austria or Italy. Of course, and in that case, theory B is not impossible. I will hereafter refer to Austria and Italy when I speak of border states or geographical division with the mountains as dividers. But as you will see if you continue listening, I think that Ötzi came from Italy because the probable approach, at least I would have ambushed him that way, at the actual murder site a short time after Ötzi got wounded, logically imply that Ötzi crossed the mountain ridge from the Italian side. He was found on the Austrian side and must therefore have been beaten in Italy sometime before the murder of him, and probably by a bellicose party of Ötzi's own clan members from his own place of residence, if my theory of the approach for the murder itself is true. If the murderers came from a rival clan in another community from the same side of the mountains as Ötzi, then they would have taken Ötzi's copper axe after the murder. Likewise, they would have taken the copper axe if they came from a rival clan from across the mountains. And hypothesis C, inner clan rivalry, i.e. rival family constellations in their own village. This hypothesis C is the third and most probable theory, which can be inferred from my lesson. Hypothesis D is that Ötzi would have been some kind of customs officer murdered by smugglers. I am very skeptical to this, especially as he died alone. Why would a customs officer who runs the risk of encountering dangerous smugglers be alone when working? Everyone must have known that it was tough times, especially a customs person. Furthermore, the distance between the archer who killed Ötzi and Ötzi himself was relatively large. The arrow had penetrated into the back, Riley from below, and stopped before the heart, but cut an artery so that Ötzi bled to death. If it had been smugglers who killed a customs official, if we suspect Ötzi of being that, then the copper axe would have been stolen. But that was not the case. The copper axe was not stolen. It remained 5 meters away from the body when the 5,000-year-old mummy was discovered. Although a customs official would hardly have had a copper axe in his possession for more than a day, so we can probably strike that scenario. Then there is a fifth hypothesis, an ad hoc theory, which is not very likely either. And that's E, hypothesis E. It was customs officials who murdered Ötzi. But if it had been customs men who murdered Ötzi, the copper axe would have been confiscated. The murder mystery. Now that we have established the most probable theory, hypothesis C, inner clan rivalry, we can move on. Here's how I think the murder happened. The fact that the lethal arrow didn't hit Ötzi with full force and that it hit him in the back suggests that Ötzi was trying to escape and thus put some distance between himself and the archer. The fact that the arrow hit the chest, Riley from below, in his back, indicates that the murderers, in plural, ambushed Ötzi right behind the mountain ridge that Ötzi passed, on the Austrian side, so that they could scout for him with a clear view without risk of being detected from a long distance or be discovered from the tracks left by the murderers in the snow when Ötzi came up the crest from the Italian side. If you come from the same side of the mountains as Ötzi, then by taking a detour and ambush him on the other side of the mountains, you do not reveal yourself by leaving footprints in the snow, which you do when you ambush someone on the same side of the mountain. Of course, it is necessary to take a detour from the Italian side to the ambush place in Austria. But there is nothing contradictory in such a method. On the contrary, it is logical, practical, and probable. But we know that Ötzi climbed the mountain in the springtime. So leaving traces in the snow was perhaps not the biggest problem for the killers. The plotter had placed some men on the other side of the top, behind a stone or under camouflage on the Austrian side, so that Ötzi could not escape in several directions if the environment allowed that. At least I would have tried to arrange it that way. But it is entirely dependent on the environment on the mountain at the regular hiking trail at the time. Ötzi saw the men where his nose first pointed, a little further down the mountain on the Austrian side, and turned and ran upwards, whereupon he was shot in the back by the archman. It is known that Ötzi was shot in the back, Riley from below. And this happened on the Austrian side where Ötzi was found with his head towards the mountain crest. If the body had slipped in the snow during these 5 millennia, chances are that the heavier upper body would have been heading downwards. Ötzi should thus have traveled from the Italian side. Once we have determined that Ötzi came from Italy, we can make conclusions that would otherwise have been considered a little bit wild. Follow me. But why did Ötzi have wounds to his body from a few days earlier? And why didn't the killers take the valuable axe with them? And why did the killer pull out the arrow shaft? And why did Ötzi think he would go safe alone on his hike? He went alone because if any of Ötzi's men, supposedly, had managed to escape, the obvious benefits to the murderers of leaving the axe would be lost. Otherwise, Ötzi's men would also have been killed and become mummified or skeletons, and they would have found them at the same time they found Ötzi 5,000 years later. And why is there a church stone in Austria that describes the murder in detail, if the murder was so secret that the murderers left the axe? I have a good answer to all of this. On the Austrian side of Indalen, metal ore was mined from which metal was extracted, and the area was already quite densely populated. I think that Ötzi was an Italian gentleman who was about to hold a clan marriage with some prominent person from the Austrian side. An intermarriage was extremely important because on the Austrian side, they had a well-developed metal industry. The clan marriage was rejected by some rival on the Italian side, who had hitherto kept a low tone, or at least tried to keep it within a relatively narrow circle. I think this because Ötzi took the risk of traveling alone across the border, probably in a manner that he thought was stealthy. I think Ötzi was already losing his role as clan leader for a relatively large village. Otherwise, he would not plan to leave his village alone at a fateful time for a marriage arrangement, probably what he thought was a secret one until the wedding was supposed to take place. After all, he must have planned his journey if mine and other scientists' assumptions that Ötzi's death was preceded by an internal conflict is sound. Then the antagonist could send some men to ambush Ötzi when he got the information about Ötzi's departure. The antagonist could hardly have received the information from Ötzi about Ötzi's planned departure, which points to simultaneous intrigues, alternatively a reverse causality, that the simultaneous intrigues made Ötzi not give the information to the antagonist. The result would be the same. Approaches like this and the supposed wedding arrangement suggest that neither Ötzi nor his antagonist were spring chickens, but they were family fathers with adult children, if it is a correct assumption. It was one of Ötzi's own children that Ötzi wanted to wedlock with some Austrian nobleman or woman, otherwise he would not have traveled over the Alps himself. Ötzi may not have had many trusted people at the time of his departure, because he chose to travel alone. It may therefore be that Ötzi knew that there was an informant in his own circle of friends, or he needed every man in his own village. And given that Ötzi's antagonist had trusted men to spare for two separate assault sites, it seems contradictory that Ötzi exposed himself so much by traveling alone. But if Ötzi was a risk taker, an A personality, a player with leadership qualities, which was probably the case, both hypotheses seem to be true. He needed every man in the village and therefore traveled alone as the risk taker he was, much like that of successful soldiers and officers in war, taking risks not to commit selbstmord aus Angst vor dem Tod, suicide from fear of death. As German soldiers said during World War II, So it is not I who have said that leaders with leadership qualities are risk-taking A personalities. In addition, the village must have consisted of at least 100 people for someone to be able to mobilize at least a dozen men without noticing that these men had left the village at least one day in advance before Ötzi did so. In addition, they must have taken a detour so that they wouldn't have left traces at the usual climbing route where Ötzi would travel. And as mentioned, the only place they could ambush Ötzi in the Alps was therefore on a mountain ridge. Otherwise it would become obvious that the killers had gone before and how many they were. The fact that Ötzi traveled in the springtime indicates that Ötzi wanted to get the marriage completed before the next winter, so that he would gain influence in the Metal clan, or at least access to metals, and a strengthened position in his village before it would no longer be possible to cross the Alps. But whatever matter anyone may have on the other side of the mountains, it is likely that they would have traveled in the spring, summer, or fall, intrigues or not intrigues in the village. Ötzi's half-healed wounds indicate that his antagonist had taken the safe option before the unsafe option and prepared for an ambush on Ötzi at two different places. First in the forest on the Italian side and then on the ridge, but failed on the first occasion when Ötzi fled. According to the analyzing of Ötzi's intestinal system and stomach, it appears that Ötzi first climbed up the mountain, only to turn and walk down again, and then walk up again on the same path as he went down. It can only indicate two things, together or separately. A. Ötzi had his family in the village, and he feared for their lives. Or B. Ötzi feared what awaited him at the ridge. It is likely that Ötzi chose to continue over the mountain ridge at night, but it is also likely that Ötzi traveled across the Alps at full moon, which you can assume that everyone did at the time. The fact that he first turned and went down without being attacked downside also indicates that no one bothered to follow Ötzi after the first attack. This reinforces my partial theory of two separate assaults by different perpetrators, but with the same antagonist still in the village. And it also confirms some scientists' theory that it was precisely an internal clan struggle that was the underlying cause behind Ötzi's death. Otherwise, he would have had no reason to first walk up the mountain and then down and then up again, and he was injured in a fight a few days earlier. The Italians were the only ones who knew that Ötzi would pass where he passed at that particular time and place. A handful of men ambushed and murdered Ötzi as described. They had to leave the copper axe because Ötzi was a clan leader and the clan was in Italy, where they would retire later. Otherwise, they would probably have been punished for regal killing. I bet Ötzi feared an attack on the peak of the Alps after the first assault that probably took place in a forest, because he escaped the archers at that time. But Ötzi was not just anyone. He was a clan leader and a brave man, and the road to the top was the quickest and fastest if the murderers pursued him. The murderers cold-hammered calculated that Ötzi was most likely to do so, since they knew Ötzi. Ötzi couldn't turn back because he knew who it was that had made an assault on him. And he knew that this area would be the first area for them to scout. Besides, it wasn't an option to come back empty-handed. His only chance was to continue to the fastest route to Austria and seek help from his own newfound allies there. The killers pulled out the arrow in Ötzi's back to leave as few traces as possible, perhaps fearing that the Italian woodcraft on the arrow shaft or feathers would reveal them. In the heat of the moment, they did not realize that precisely this would cast shadows on them if Ötzi's body was discovered. Why? Let's turn the stake and see it from the eyes of a criminologist. Someone had tried to hide his identity, the murderer, by pulling out the arrow. The chip remained inside of the victim's body. These perpetrators left the precious copper axe untouched, so it was hardly from stinginess they pulled out the arrow. Nor was it from fear of being left without ammunition that they pulled out the arrow, as Ötzi's killer broke off several of Ötzi's arrows on the spot. Had there been one or more robbers, he or she would not have bothered to pull out the arrow, but they would have taken the copper axe. But now it was some of Ötzi's tribal members from their own village, and then it seems logical, in the eyes of a criminologist, for the perpetrators to pull out the arrow but leave the copper axe. This is a good indication, which also reveals the motive for the murder, as I said, but it is no evidence, as if evidence would be a requirement for police action at the Neolithic area, when one has such a strong indication. Evidence at that time was scarce. And the approach can certainly be confirmed by any police officer, prosecutor, lawyer, judge, and committee of any kind, being a criminals, in this case a regal murderer's, typical approach. The church stone in Austria with the engraving of the murder scenario then. Why didn't the murderers take the axe if they were so happy to brag through engraved stones with the ochre? I explain the church stone with the fact that the murderers were successful in climbing the social ladder after the murder. The church stone was thus created after the situation had stabilized for the new clan leaders, perhaps one or more generations afterwards, when the murderers had built up their empire and the murder had transformed into a heroic act. But for it to be true, an intermarriage arrangement must still have taken place sometime later between someone in the new clan and the Austrians, since the engraved stone was found in a church in Austria. The alternative explanation for the handcrafted church stone, which was not initially a church stone since it was made 5,000 years ago, is a bit far-fetched. Namely, that the murder was revealed when the body was found by the Austrians 5,000 years ago. And it was found that an arrow had caused Ötzi's death. All according to my criminologist's reasoning. And that it coincided that the body could not be carried home because of a snowstorm, which subsequently covered the body with snow and ice, which never melted again, and thus made it impossible to find the body again. Until a little more than a decade ago, the copper axe was located some distance from the body, 5 meters, 5 yards about, and with a little luck, it could have been hidden in snow when the body was first found at the time following on the event. Everything depends on how exactly a storm strikes, or how nature appeared at the time when the body was supposedly found 5,000 years ago. partly because the axe must be hidden in snow without any traces left, but partly the body must still be discoverable in the snow. The copper axe is the first thing a rescue team would have been looking for in the air. One can imagine even more wild speculations about Austrian murderers who switched sides, but then we would be talking conspiracy theories. My indicated theory, incidentally, means that the civilization in Europe did not necessarily have its cradle in Italy or Greece. Thank you and see you later, alligator, Atawile, crocodile.